Okay, just when you thought you'd got away from Alistair Leake, he comes back. So I'll hand you over to Alistair for the second instalment.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian. And now I'm on to my day job, really, which is the enormous pleasure of looking after the Allerton project. I recognise many of your faces in here. I know many of you have visited over the years, and I hope that you will continue to do so. We were very fortunate to be left the 800-acre estate in Leicestershire in 1992, and what perfect timing for Lord and Lady Allerton to leave us this estate. I'll just remind you, it was when our leaders went off to Rio and signed the Rio Convention, which was the first time governments had committed towards biological diversity. And just by coincidence, at that exact same time, the politicians in Europe decided that 15% of our agricultural land should be set aside and not used for food production. Perfect opportunity for GWCT to use that land for the benefit of biodiversity, and that's exactly what was done. And so, from the work that had been done with Hugh and Nick and the Game Birds Project, we were able to put the results of that research into position on a single farm at one moment in time, put a management regime in there and observe what happened, and the results were fascinating. The farm has developed since then. We now farm 2,000 acres in total, and that's very important because I want the estate to be seen as a commercial farming business by commercial farmers, because only that way will they take inspiration from what we've done and go away and realise that some of it, not all of it, but some of it, they can do themselves. And I pay tribute to the research that's also been done at Loddington since those early days, over 200 papers published by the staff over that time. So a lot of activity. This is a map of the farm itself. You can see from the different colours, which represent different crops, that the three-crop rule is not going to cause us a problem. The in-hand area running to 333 hectares, which the research is concentrated around. And then we have three main objectives, the first one actually follows on very nicely from a graph I showed you this morning, which showed the rise in population, and so you can see why that word productive is in bold, because we need to be productive if we are going to feed all those people. The second word I've used is the research, and the 200 papers are a testament to that. And the final point, well, Sir John made it beautifully for me, actually, disseminating the information. He gave a good example of how the dissemination of GWCT science had changed his opinion on a close season for brown hares, which I trust is very good news for the brown hare, actually. The management timeline of the estate splits into three quite neat phases. At 93 to 2001, when we ran a full game management system, which you'll be familiar with, and then the period from 2001 to 2006, when we stopped the predator control but kept everything else the same. And then from 2006 to 2010, when we took the winter feeding out and just left the habitat as it was. And shortly I will show you the results of that. But let's go back to something that Mike Clark was talking about, which is the pressure which land is facing. And this one of these graphs you'll be very familiar with, and that's the blue line. That's the blue line of the Songbird Abundance Index, or breeding birds, which has declined since we started counting them in the 1960s, and we were talking about the State of Nature report. The green line is national wheat yields in the UK, which quadrupled across the same period. And we shouldn't lose sight of what a fantastic achievement that is, because that's made food more reliably available, more affordable, and arguably has protected natural landscapes in other parts of the world, where we're increasingly getting our food from being felled and turned over to agriculture. The problem is, of course, while wheat yields remain high, bird numbers appear to remain low. So can our approach of habitat management, predator control, and winter feeding crack the problem? Well, the Allison Project and the keeper there demonstrated that that absolutely was the case. And that's the songbird numbers are depicted there by the red graph, which shows that, the population density went up to the levels previously measured in the early 1960s when we first started counting. What I think really I find astounding is how quickly that went up. In just 3 years, that was achieved. Now, I'd always been told that intensive agriculture and biodiversity cannot coexist. I think this really rather disproves that, and that if you intensively manage your wildlife as well as you manage your farming, you can, in fact, have both. And really, just to prove that point, let me just show you the wheat yields achieved by the farm manager at Allerton during that same period. And you can see that these yields are actually in excess of the national average, which is deemed to be intensive. And so here we have a situation of modern, intensive, highly productive farming and a great deal of biodiversity coexisting. I think that should give us a great deal of hope for the future. Let's have a look at some of the key pieces of research that were done to help achieve that. This was a piece done by Chris Stoat and Nigel Boatman. Here what we're doing is along the top we're identifying a series of plants which produce seeds, and then down the left-hand side we observe which birds are feeding on those seeds. Because, you see, if we don't know the answer to that question, we don't know what to plant to feed those birds. So that's a time-consuming but very important question that we needed to answer. This graph shows one of those wildlife seed mixes. This is millet. This is millet being grown in a strip, and we're observing how many yellowhammers come in and feed on that strip. And you can see in September we've got over 60,000 seeds per square meter available for the birds to feed on. At that stage they're not feeding much there, probably because the seed isn't quite ripe, or they may be getting food from elsewhere. But as you see, as we move into the winter period, the number of yellowhammers visiting that plot goes up and the amount of seed available goes down because, of course, they are eating it. What is stark to me is that when we get to January, which is in the middle of winter, we've got no seed left and we've got no yellowhammers either. So where are they going? Well, that is a big question. And, of course, we know that this period is known as the hungry gap. And it seems to me that if we can undo that pressure point, then we can provide the answer. This is a pheasant feeder, which is put on the estate for game birds to feed from. When we withdrew predator control, the number of pheasants on the estate halved. But the amount of food going out through the pheasant feeders doubled. So that tells me that something other than pheasants is doing very well from that food. And there's really only one way to measure that, and that is to put a CCTV camera on it and film it, and that way you can get some idea of what is there. And of course you get quite a lot of the usual suspects, and this emphasises the point I was talking about this morning about how we manage rodenticides. If you provide food into the countryside, then you are going to attract a great number of species. But actually, grain scattering is a better way to feed to avoid rodents, but of course you can't film it. And so in order to get these results, we had to do it through the feeder. We did also notice this other interaction, which is that of between the game birds and the farmland birds, the game birds coming and feeding at the hoppers and releasing the feed to feed those farmland birds. So the results here of two studies, 2004 and 2008, and the green segment in the circle represents the amount of time that small birds spent feeding at these game bird feeders. And so you might be forgiven for thinking these were actually farmland bird feeders, because a large proportion of the grain is actually going to those birds. And the reason for that is quite simple. They have no other food to get. This is all that is there available for them, and they are coming in and using those game feeders to feed. And so that showed us that the importance of alleviating that hungry gap was critical. I think this next graph is also particularly useful because it shows the correlation which I showed before of the late winter bird count and the breeding bird count going hand in hand. And so when we deconstruct the 20 years of the Allerton Project, first year we did nothing in 1992, we collected the baseline data. And then we instigated this full game management system. You can see that the songbird breeding abundance responded extremely well to that. In fact, it doubled. When we remove predator control, we see some depression in the numbers, and when we take winter feeding out, we see a further depression. And that shows us, really, that habitat alone is not going to answer the question for all species. And when the keeper comes back again, we're pleased to see, for the first 2 years, increases again, and then, of course, we have the most terrible weather of the 2012-2013 breeding season, which quite clearly showed the impact that weather can have. During this period, the wild pheasants showed a very similar response. These are only wild birds, no releasing at this point, particularly vulnerable, of course, to predation. That, of course, allowed us to have a shoot on the farm, and in fact, shoots were held for most of the years of that early period. The trust for Allerton required the shoot to be an integral part of the farming system, so we do that by making the keeper responsible for the stewardship. We were only shooting wild cocks during that period and no releasing. And we inevitably shot some of the neighbour's birds because we tagged his release birds and 20% of our bag was his. What, of course, he can't tell us is how many of his bag were ours. I remind him of that. And so in this new phase, as we go forward, we have a part-time keeper to begin with on 800 acres, some release cocks in line with best practice. And then, very fortunately, the Church of England, that owns 500 acres next door to us, asked us to take on the shooting rights of that land, and that's enabled us to go over to a full-time keeper at this point. It's a very nice correlation shown here between the number of autumn pheasants on the farm and the number of breeding songbirds, and you can see there is a clear connection which is associated with that game management. And, of course, following on from Sir John, I have to say a few words about the brown hare, because it was the graph I'm about to show you which particularly caught his eye, which is the expansion in the population of brown hares at Allerton in response to that full game management system. At this point here, you need to start shooting hares because they're becoming so abundant there is a risk that they're going to cause harm to some of the seed mixes that you're trying to sow for the birds. So it really is very much a question of balance. And you can see the impact of removing the keeper in terms of the hare numbers. Very fortunate here to have a comparison site, which is denoted by the red bars on the graph. And you can see that during that period, which is on a very similar soil type, similar farming system, just 5 miles away from Loddington, the hares have been hanging on in there until actually 2012, when for the first time we didn't count any hares at the comparison site. But at Loddington, you can see they are already starting to increase again in response to the arrival back of the gamekeeper. So that's been the main thrust of our work for the first 20 years or so, looking at biodiversity, looking at game and songbirds. About 10 years ago, we added another aspect to the work, which was to look at soil erosion and soil management, and we've now had 6 major projects looking specifically at this. I hasten to add that none of this has come out of your membership fees. This has all come from won contracts with government, environment agency, and in some cases private companies as well. So we're looking very much at soil erosion here. This particular research study produced 6 PhDs. I won't go through the detail of those, but was extremely informative to us. This second lot of work looked at cultivation type, cultivation direction, and the use of beetle banks to block slopes. And I showed you this morning how highly effective those can be in stopping soil moving down a slope. We also discovered from this that 80% of the erosion at Loddington was coming down the tram lines, and that meant we went on and carried out another major project which looked at how we dealt with that. So this has formed a large part of our work, and indeed quite a number of papers ever since. We've discovered that moving away from plough-based tillage to non-inversion tillage, particularly leaving trash and cover on the surface, which is why I'm so enthusiastic about cover crops, is very, very good for helping to reduce erosion. We underestimate the value of earthworms too. We've now had three important studies looking at these. The contribution they make to helping water go down through the soil is enormous through their burrowing activities. And I'm afraid because we're so often on the back of a tractor inside the cab pulling a machine, we don't have any feel for what they're doing. But you know, when you dig down on a field which has been ploughed for 5 years and one which has not, and put a little white disc over the earthworm holes, you can see that there are far more numerous and bigger here in this system. And this is helping the soil to be more resilient and to allow the rainfall when it falls hard to soak into the soil. But this is also helping the roots of the crop go deep down into the soil and take that moisture out when we end up in periods of drought. The result of our work has meant that very many people come and visit the Allerton Project now. And so we hold a huge number of workshops on a whole range of subjects throughout the year. We've also done a lot of work in the woodland. It's not just the crops that we harvest, but we're harvesting wood too. You can see this is a particularly poorly managed wood that we've been through and felled timber out of. And the result of that work is a much better structure, which is good for wildlife. What has been critical to this is finding a use for that wood. And we've done that by putting in biomass heating systems into our premises so that we can use that wood chip. We do this on a pretty industrial scale. This is a grain store, which is empty for half of the year. But it's absolutely perfect for drying wood chip in using the same mechanism. So that's been fueling our system. We harvest sunlight, but I'm pleased to say not by putting panels out in fields, but putting them on top of roofs. And we also go one step further and we harvest the rainwater off that roof, because I really do resent sending it down the drain for nothing and buying it back from the water authority once they've cleaned up the pollutants that other people have put in it. And so this is all about using the resources of a farm, which include game, include water, include wood. Here we've got a car park which has been laid, made from recycled silage wrap. And that's come from our pesticide container recycling centre. We take the waste in from 100 farms around and reprocess it. It's known as Allerton Recycling. And last year we reached the finals of the National Recycling Awards in London for this particular initiative. This is a picture of our new visitor centre. Those of you who haven't visited, do please come and see it. It's actually built out of straw bales and insulated with sheep's wool. So it provides a wonderful environment for us to show visitors what we do. And we won Sustainable Building of the Year for this in 2012. We're in the final of the Energy Awards this year, which is for the most energy-efficient building in the UK. So we've had to submit a great deal of data to support this, but it was sufficient to convince the judges that we were at least a worthy contender. And the response to having a new centre, which I should add was very generously funded 60% by the taxpayer, is that we have seen a vast increase in the number of bookings and people coming to the estate to learn about our work. And finally, to finish off, don't underestimate the importance of engaging the community. Building a new centre and doing events for the community has brought us much more closely together. We're talking about a red squirrel reintroduction. We couldn't possibly do that without convincing the people around the village and around us that we were good people to work with and that this is something that they wanted to get behind. This is a local WI planting a heritage apple orchard of old Leicestershire apple varieties, which the community will be involved in. And we're greatly expanding our activities of school children. We've heard from both Mike Clark and Sir John the importance of interacting with young people and giving them the opportunity to come out into the countryside and understand not just about where their food comes from, but actually about farming, game management, and the rest of what we do. And so, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave it there. Only before I do, to say I haven't been able to touch on all the work the Allerton Project does, but hopefully that leaves you enough to entice you to come and visit. Thank you very much.